few verses today without a purport, and then there's a purport, and the verse we're chanting doesn't have a purport. So I'm going to read word by word with translation, and then we'll chant that verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from 9th canto, chapter 15, text 22. Grihita lilaya strinam. Grihito lilaya, grihito lilaya strinam. Grihito lilaya strinam. Samaksham krita kilbisha. Samaksham krita kilbisha. Samaksham krita kilbisha. Mahismatyam sanirudao. Mahismatyam sanirudao. Mahitmatyam sanirudaho. Mukto yena kapiryata. Divine grace through the Prabhupada. When Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya Arjuna in the presence of the women and thus offended him, Kartavirya Arjuna easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati, just as one captures a monkey and then releases him neglectfully. The next verse is, Saikatu migra mirayam vicharam vijyanevane yadrishaya shramapadam jamadag nirupavishat. Once, while Kartavirya Arjuna was wandering unengaged in a solitary forest and hunting, he approached the residence of Jamadagni. Purport. Kartavirya Arjuna had no business going to the residence of Jamadagni, but because he was puffed up by his extraordinary power, he went there and offended Parasurama. This was the prelude to his being killed by Parasurama for his offensive act. Text 24. Tasmai sanaradevaya munir arhanam arharat sansayanat maya bahya hasmitya tapodana. The sage Damandagni, who was engaged in great austerities in the forest, received the king very well, along with the king's soldiers, ministers, and carriers. He supplied all the necessities to worship these guests, for he possessed a Kamadenu cow that was able to supply everything. Purport. The Brahma Samhita informs us that the spiritual world, and especially the planet Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna lives, is full of Surabhi cows, Surabhi Rabhi Palayantam. The Surabhi cow is also called Kamadenu. Although Jamadagni possessed only one Kamadenu, he was able to get from it everything desirable. Thus he was able to receive the king, along with the king's great number of followers, ministers, soldiers, animals, and palanquin carriers. When we speak of a king, we understand that he's accompanied by many followers. Jamadagni was able to receive all the king's followers properly and feed them sumptuously with food prepared in ghee. The king was astonished at how opulent Jamadagni was because of possessing only one cow, and therefore he became envious of the great sage. This was the beginning of his offense. Parasurama, The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead killed Kartavirya Arjuna because Kartavirya Arjuna was too proud. One may possess unusual opulence in this material world, but if one becomes puffed up and acts whimsically, he will be punished by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a lesson to learn from this history in which Parasurama became angry at Kartavirya Arjuna and killed him and rid the world, entire world, of Kshatriyas 21 times. Hare Krishna. I want to thank all of you for receiving myself and Gopalasha Priya, who's with me, but she went to Pune for 2 days and she's returning this morning. But we were received very nicely here. And we visited 3 places while we were in India. We came first to Mumbai and then we went to Vrindavan. And from Vrindavan we went to Mayapur and then back again. So Gopa has not been in India for a long time. Myself, due to being on the GBC, I come 2 times a year to attend meetings. But she has not been for many years. And many changes had occurred, not only locally here in the temple, but all over India. So when we came back to India after being in here and then Vrindavan and Mayapur back, she said, "I'm so happy to be back here. This is the best place." And I really think that that's how many of us feel. It's the best place. Of course, the building has become beautiful. Many of you recall when it was not a building that was a temple, but just a small little godown that was the temple. And my first visit to Chaupati, Brahmacharis were living over there, and they gave up our rooms because we came from New Vrindavan and Columbus. I had an ashram of ladies, and I brought my entire ashram, young Brahmacharinis. So the Brahmacharis very selflessly gave up their rooms over here so that we would have space to stay. And Maharaj very kindly allowed us to share his bathroom facility. And even though it was very simple then, in spite of the simplicity, it was the same overwhelming mood of devotion and affection and service that beautifies the temple today. Of course, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath are the supreme ornaments that decorate our hearts, and because of their presence in your hearts, all of you have become very beautiful and well-mannered. And Srila Prabhupada is constantly showering his blessings because he is feeling encouraged by all of your behavior. So then this little go-down room then came upstairs, but still it was very, very simple. There was no marble on the wall, there were no chandeliers, there were no beautiful paintings. But nonetheless, the mood was there, such a vibrant mood, such a welcoming mood that we always look forward to come here. And little by little, this transformation occurred, because when Krishna is pleased, then more and more conditioned souls are attracted. So the little handful of devotees was expanding and expanding. So this room was no longer large enough, so these other 2 rooms, they were opened up. And now yesterday I could see, even with that extension, it is still not large enough, so I don't know what the plan is to how we will expand this building any further. But it is a symptom of the success of Srila Prabhupada's desire to capture conditioned souls. And when one person simply surrenders to that desire to serve Srila Prabhupada and assist his mission, wonderful things can happen. And you are very fortunate here because you have such a personality to guide you and to lead you. in the form of His Holiness Radhanaswami. So in every aspect, this temple is full with all opulences. You know, I'm very happy to be here. And today, or tonight, I will be taking your departure. And I look forward, if it's Krishna's desire, to returning again during Kartik. But again, thank you very much. So, I wanted to reflect a little bit on yesterday's class. You know, we're dealing here with very illustrious individuals, and the incident that is being described is what you could say otherworldly, because we don't have in our present history in the world Kamadhenu cows who can perform such wonderful acts of charity, such as supplying endless amounts of butter and ghee and milk and whatever paraphernalia is required to serve the Lord and His devotees. So we're, you know, we're in a situation where our opulences in one way are limited, although the opulence of surrender and service is unlimited so long as one chooses that avenue or that route. So we can ask, what is the business of a devotee? And to answer that question, I refer to His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. And he explains that the business of a devotee is to remain in contact with the Absolute Truth 24 hours a day. So this is not something outside of the actual mission of Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya, through His shikshastikam prayers, has given us an indication that the desired goal is to 24 hours a day be chanting the holy name, glorifying the Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead. And this is possible if one actually enters with an open heart into the spiritual practices of Bhakti Yoga. So people will always discuss, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is saying this, people will always discuss worldly affairs, worldly topics. But he admonishes that we should remain inattentive. In other words, we should ignore these topics. But he cautions we should show respect to the materialist. In other words, we should not risk offending even a materialist. We should show them respect from some distance, you know, respect. But we should not adopt their behavior. And then he says we should mentally reject them. Now this is a business of a devotee. And a devotee knows very well that serving other devotees is most pleasing to the Supreme Lord. And because the business of a devotee is to remain in contact with the Absolute Truth 24 hours a day, this is only possible through devotional service. As soon as one becomes attentive to some other material aspect or quality of life, then your attention is turned away from the Supreme Lord. And your attention is diverted, and your energy is diverted. So 24 hours a day remain in contact. And that is explained by Lord Chaitanya, that this is possible through the chanting. And when one chants without offense, feeling oneself more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, then one can always chant Kirtanayasadahari, always chant. That means 24 hours a day. when we associate nicely with one another, when we associate with the holy name through kirtan, through japa, through reading the books about Lord Krishna. This is also, Prabhupada explains, chanting is also means reading, the talk, reading books about Krishna. This is also chanting. Then we become absorbed. We become absorbed with Krishna and his name. And then it's actually possible 24 hours a day. And you may be thinking, oh, but wait a minute, somewhere along the line I have to sleep. At least a few hours I have to sleep. So what happens during that time? But the all-powerful personality of Godhead is present even in the consciousness of a so-called sleeping person, if that person is otherwise engaged in chanting his holy name and hearing his glories. So that even in the time of so-called sleeping, you will be hearing Krishna's glories, you will be seeing Krishna's pastimes. So therefore it is a completely reasonable supposition that we should constantly remain in contact with the absolute truth 24 hours a day. It's not out of bounds. It's not impossible. So we have this wonderful sage, and he was engaged in great austerities in the forest. And it was explained yesterday, or in one of the purports, that the duty of the Brahmins or the sages is, you know, they should control their senses, control their mind and control their senses. A Kshatriya may not be so able to do that because he's more in contact with the mode of passion. You know, he has a different focus, he has a different dharma, or different duty. But the sage, who's engaged in austerity, so what are these great austerities? Is controlling the mind and the senses. And he had a kamadhenu cow, which means whatever he wanted, it would be supplied to him. Still, he's living simply in the forest, you know, sitting on, one can imagine, a deer mat under a tree near a running water stream, an unpolluted running water stream. He didn't need a water purifier. He could have had a fantastic, you know, mansion or so many other so-called comforts of life, but he was actually rightfully situated. So when this person came with all his ministers and followers and soldiers and animals and palanquin carriers, at that time he called upon the ability of the kamadhenu cow to supply the necessities for properly receiving the king and his entourage. And in doing so, the king became completely astounded, you know, seeing how easy it was to, you know, here this king had to go out to get anything. He had to conquer so many other persons and so many lands. And then he would have to send convoys to, you know, if you conquer some place, then you have to send your soldiers to protect it, to keep it under your control. It's not like you just pick it up and walk away with it. So it's a constant struggle to maintain what you have, to acquire more and protect and maintain that. So the king was seeing this cow, and he was quite astonished at this opulence of Jayamandagni. Not the opulence being the cow, not how he was living, because he was living according to the proper standard of a renounced person. So what happened was he became envious, you see. Now this envy is not something that's only for persons outside of the Brahmana ashram. You know, sometimes as devotees we can frankly say that we may become envious of another devotee. Oh, that devotee, he chants better than I chant. you know, his Sanskrit is better than my Sanskrit. His dhoti, her sari, it's better than mine. Their room is slightly larger than mine. They have more space on the floor. You know, some, they're eating different prasadam. Sometimes these things, which are very superficial, disturb the mind even of devotees. And then there's this envy comes in. And it's a very uncomplimentary quality. In the West, we have a saying, one becomes green with envy. So green, if you become greenish in your complexion, it indicates lack of good health. So even by, you know, the non-devotee standards, it's kind of understood to become envious is an unhealthy situation. So this king, Kartavirya Arjuna, he became envious. And actually, a wonderful thing happened because of that envy, which if it had gone fully unchecked, of course the whole thing is going to be elaborately explained. Here we're having a little synopsis. But, you know, if the envy had gone unchecked and it was allowed to manifest and play out, you know, so sometimes you become envious of another person. So your behavior toward that other person sometimes becomes a little degraded. It becomes a little improper. Or you start acquiring more than you need because you want to, you know, somehow or other, you feel more secure if you, you know, you see this person has one more book than I have, let me get another book. So this type of envy mentality, unhealthy mentality. And sometimes there's no one there to check us. It happens, what we say, under the radar. It's not immediately detected. So we're behaving in a manner that's tinged with this envy, but it's not detected, it's not checked. And so it will continue until at a certain point in time it will become embarrassingly revealed. And at that time, you know, people react in different ways to being caught, as we can say, red-handed. Some people are grateful and some people rebel against it. So, Parasuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, actually it was described later as Shakta Vesha Avatar. He was empowered specifically for this mission to rid the world of the Kshatriyas. He killed Kartavirya Arjuna. And this was actually a great act of mercy and compassion, because Kartavirya Arjuna, being so proud, and you know, the tendency when you have some position, it's very difficult to remain humble, in an, you know, naturally humble. We can be superficially humble and fold our hands and bow our head, but you know, somebody's giving you all attention, all adoration, touching your feet, and make, you know, just, you're the focus of their life. And that's what happens with a king, because everybody's going to be going after him. You don't want to cross the path of the king, so everybody's just, you know, fawning over him. You get, you know, you forget you're not God. I mean, he may not be thinking I'm God, but certainly he's feeling God-like. And the king is a representative of the Supreme Lord in the ideal sense. So when this happens, we have so many examples of out-of-control rulers who, due to too much misused power. Yesterday Maharaj was describing this, the that one who is very powerful, you know, they can cause a person, a Kshatriya who's very powerful, can cause a lot of havoc. We see in the last century there was that Adolf Hitler who created so much disturbance. He did so many abominable activities, absolutely horrendous, because he had power. But his power was immature, and his power was not being properly utilized. Then currently in this day and age, at the moment as we're sitting here, in some country called Libya, there is a fellow called General Gaddafi, and he's in charge of that country for, I don't know, 50 years or more. And he's completely intoxicated by his power and position. And the atrocities he has committed during his regime have finally come to a point where the common person is saying, enough, we've had enough. And they're rebelling. Just like in Egypt a few weeks ago, the common people said, enough, we've had enough of Mubarak, you've got to go. And the guy was 83 years old, hanging on with his feeble body and his false teeth. Finally, he was shoved out the door. Everybody's happy for a few minutes. But this is the nature, you know. Somebody gets too much power, and he forgets, what is his role? What is my role? I'm supposed to protect these people. I'm supposed to exhibit compassion to these people. What is real compassion? Real compassion is to induce the living entities, the conditioned souls, toward the Supreme Lord. That is compassion. That as your leader, as your guide and mentor, I should be helping you, inducing you, pushing you back home, back to Godhead, toward Krishna's lotus feet. But these people who are intoxicated by material wealth and adoration are only capable of oppressing people who oppose them and allowing foolish people who appear to be their so-called friends, and they're only their friends as long as they do what the dictator requests, those people he keeps around him. So everything becomes skewed. It becomes out of balance. A real friend will correct you. That is compassion. My friend, you're doing something very dangerous, very harmful. You know, please check yourself. And a person who has a real sense of dignity will be grateful that someone cared enough to check their behavior. But these people who are so thoroughly intoxicated by material energy, they become even more angry. They're like a serpent with a head at each end. You know, you have seen those two-headed serpents in India? They have a head. Where there should be a tail, there's a head, and there's a head at where the head is. So you can bite from either direction. So when that serpent gets angry, biting, biting all over, causing so much destruction. So it was actually a great blessing on Kartavirya Arjuna because his mood was so corrupted that he was envious of a sage. And he wasn't envious of the sage for the qualities of the sage, which was his detachment and his great austerities. He was envious because of the cow that was in the care of the sage. And he was not seeing how Kartavirya Arjuna was, how Jamadagni was using this possession in the service of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. He was thinking, if I get this cow, I won't have to endeavor so much to go around conquering the world. I can ask this cow, produce me unlimited armies, and I'll get it. I can ask this cow, subdue these people, and I'll get it. He had a thoroughly corrupt mentality. And Parasaram, he detected this corruptness, and he dealt with it swiftly. It was mentioned yesterday that a person's greatness, this was from the Krishna book, it's the story of Bhrigu Muni when he was testing who is the most powerful personality. Is it Brahma? Is it Shiva? Is it Vishnu? So when he saw that, you know, Vishnu was so tolerant, he understood who was the greatest personality. And Prabhupada comments that a person's greatness is evaluated by how one tolerates provoking behavior. So, tolerating provoking behavior, when that provoking behavior is injuring others, is not tolerance. it's not, you know, that type of tolerance is not advisable. So Parasuram, you could say, well, he was acting intolerantly against Kartavirya Arjuna. But that type of intolerance is actually preferred, because that intolerance is not coming from the material level, and it is actually an act of great compassion. Then I was, you know, considering, because there's been this discussion about the Kshatriyas and different social orders, but there are Kshatriyas in different cultures. You know, it's not that Kshatriyas are only here in India, the land of Bharat. of course, I'm using the word in a general way, meaning that the Kshatriyas were the protectors. They were meant to be the protectors, the leaders of the society. but the Kshatriyas, they have a certain mood, a certain nature that gives them the ability to perform the activities that allow them to protect society, to lead society. So other cultures that, you know, every nation, of course, you have their army, and the army, we can say those are Kshatriyas. Of course, Kshatriyas, in the strict sense, they're very honorable people. You know, they behave by a strict code of honor. They're not just out there acting like crazy men. You know, for example, during the war on Kurukshetra, it was explained, during the day they were just at each other's throat, ready to kill one another. But when the sun went down, the fighting stopped. And they'd even come to each other's camp and sit, discuss what was going on, and eat together. So, what a high level of honor. They would not pull weapons on an injured person or a person whose back was turned, for example. So, different cultures you have in, formerly in England, now they have people called knights, but it's just a social title that you can pay for and you can become a knight. K-N-I-G-H-T. So the knights were noblemen or warriors in the British Empire. And they served the kings. And they were actually really, really very, very, you could say, cultured persons with high level of accountability. They had their codes of honor that they lived and died by. And their number one, that had a set of, you know, if you can say ethos, a set of behavior, code of honor. So the number one was never commit murder. So that meant, of course, you're in a fight head on, you may kill the other person, but murder was when outside of battle you would kill somebody, that was murder, and they would never do that. And that they should always run from treason. So what is treason? Treason is when you turn opposition to the state. We should also run from treason. If we hear people speaking against Dharma, speaking against Krishna, speaking against Guru Sadhu Shastra, we should run away from that type of treason. It's good, this code. They were never to be cruel, and they were always to give mercy to anyone who asked. So if somebody would ask, please protect me, they were obliged as a knight. Another one was that they had to honor ladies and gentlemen and widows. And they should never force ladies, gentlemen, and widows. And then the last part of their formal code of honor, that they should never take up a wrongful battle, which meant they should not fight for false love or worldly gain. So this was their codes of conduct. And there were other ones. One of the interesting ones, that they had to practice religion diligently. In other words, they had to be on the side of God. There were no atheists in the Knights. And they should never break faith for any reason. So this, you know, this is one type of Kshatriya. Then you have the, in America, of course, we have our so-called armies, our military men, but previous to America becoming America, there was Native American Indians who lived in America. And some of these Native American Indians were Kshatriyas. And one such tribe of Kshatriyas was called Apache Indians. And they were fearless warriors. And they had many, many abilities. They trained, you know, they trained to be able to run without stopping, without drinking, for over 24 hours, running at full speed. I mean, even our top marathon man today could not do that. You know, he has to have his Gatorade and his, you know, vitamins and his different little, you know, food additives. These people were taught to fast entirely, not even drink water, and be able to run for 24 hours, and not on a nice, you know, flat, well-manicured situation, any type of terrain. In addition, some of the greater warriors had some mystic powers. They were able to, you know, do certain things that were very out of the reach of the common person. One such person, he was like, you could say, the last great Apache warrior. His name was Geronimo. And when you know, hear about this person's story, it was simply amazing what he did to try to save his people from being slaughtered by the U.S. Army. How he was able, you know, he was being chased by entire armies of military men who were mounted on horses and had guns, and, you know, he had nothing, not even his bow and arrow. And he was so swift that they could only imagine that the wind had carried him away. And he could, you know, in front of their eyes, create situations. One time they were getting so close, and he created, by his mystic powers, a windstorm that created, you know, when the wind came, then it created dust, and then they couldn't see him. By the time the dust stopped, he was gone. So that's another type of Kshatriya. Then you have your Japanese samurai. These were military men. They were associated with the nobility. And then we have, we have animals such as Hanuman, who's a wonderful Kshatriya. And, you know, Hanuman, you see many homes, they have Hanuman in front of their homes to protect their home. And now there's some new icons, some new deities that are emerging. You know, we thought we knew everything, but a couple of days ago I was going to the airport, and, you know, in Calcutta, going to a Calcutta airport, and so I saw a couple homes. You know, you see Hanuman in that pose, dashing across the universe, holding the mountain in his hand with the healing herbs to save his master. So that pose where he's just flying like that. So there were a couple of houses like that. The third house, I saw this figure, but I had to look again. It was Spider-Man. So it is really unfortunate nowadays that people are losing contact, they're out of touch with reality. Reality means in connection with Krishna. When we get disconnected with Krishna, we'll take an ordinary person to be superordinary, or we'll take a totally fictitious person and honor that. I mean, who is Spider-Man? He's fiction. He's not even real. But anyway, so these are, you know, some type of examples I was looking that were in terms of the Brahmanas. And then the point was made yesterday about punishment. You know, as Vaishnavas, generally, we're not thinking about punishment. We're thinking about redemption, rectification. And this is correct, that punishment, it's intended for correction and protection. So in other words, if you do something against society and you're apprehended, you will be punished. It's for your good, it's for your correction, and it's for the protection of society. You see, so the two things. But if it's only there because you've made me so angry, that, you know, this type of punishment, so I may beat you up, this will not benefit you, nor will it benefit me or anyone else. So we have to, you know, keep that balance and understanding. And then we were, the forgiveness was brought forward. So it's most important. Without forgiveness, so many misbehaviors will remain caught in the heart, the ramification of the misbehavior. And the person won't have the opportunity to be fully rectified. So forgiveness does not mean forgetfulness. For example, let's say one of you have robbed the bank, and or you've robbed my home, you've robbed my safe. And I can forgive you. I can understand you did something that wasn't your normal nature. I can forgive you. However, at the same time, I won't give you the keys to the safe. You know, so you, I won't forget. You have this propensity. I forgive you, but you know, you keep it in mind. So sometimes the tendency is to forgive and forget. That's there. But by forgetting, then the person again is misbehaves because he's not being checked. So this forgetfulness is not always beneficial to the offender. So I just wanted to end with a few words of advice from our Param Guru, from my Param Guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. That, you know, we all individually struggle practicing our sadhana bhakti, practicing chanting, practicing serving. And he makes a good point, especially when we're living together. There can be some friction sometimes, like in the bamboo, the bamboo forest, you know, the bamboo is living together with so many other bamboo. And sometimes there's a little friction, unintended, due to the nature of the weather. Some breeze comes in the bamboo, there's some friction. And even that friction can cause fire. So sometime when we live in close quarters, a little friction may come, maybe some fiery situations. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, it is the duty of each resident in the mutt to learn tolerance. Well, that's a good point. And that one who cultivates mixed religions or mixed religious principles cannot serve Hari. But this is something to think about nowadays, because in our preaching, we are confronted with many different belief systems, different so-called religious practices and non-religious practices. We are meeting so many great and powerful people. And our goal and intention is to give them Krishna. But sometimes you're just not able to walk up and say, here's Krishna, please take him. You have to kind of take some time. And you may even have to temporarily flatter that person's sensibilities. But it's actually something we have to be very careful that we don't become cross-pollinated, which means we don't become infected by their behaviors, by their irresolute determinations. That we have to remain resolute in our determination to serve Krishna and to give that same determination to people who have no sense of determination at this point in time in their lives. You know, all is not one. You know, Krishna says that as people surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. But all people are not consciously surrendering to Krishna, so different results are occurring. And we have to be careful that we don't start equating these different paths and these different practices with bhakti. They have in USA now, big deal, it's called Bhakti Fest. Some of us quietly call it the Bhakti Farce. I mean, it's wonderful, people are getting together and chanting, but they don't just chant Hare Krishna, they chant all kinds of stuff. They chant stuff that doesn't even connect with Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, but a lot of Shiva mantras, a lot of Durga mantras. It's a free-for-all. And some things are just, feel-good chants. But they call it Bhakti Fest. But bhakti is only that that pertains to the pleasure of Sri Krishna, and nothing else is bhakti. So we have to remember this so that we don't become, our vision does not become blurred. There. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says that, if we want to obtain the ultimate goal, we have to abandon all varieties of popular opinions. In other words, we can't become moved by these popular opinions. We have to hear and evaluate those opinions according to the instructions of the Vedas. So abandon, give up these popular opinions, and if juxtapose them to the Vedas, to the instructions of the Vedas. If they don't line up, keep away. This is our only protector is Hare Katha, topics glorifying Lord Krishna. And the moment we turn away or move aside from that protection, because this is also our protection, this is our weapons. We're not carrying swords, we're carrying japa mala. Then the minute we turn away, ourselves away, then these objects that are around us, they'll turn against us. And Bhaktisiddhanta says they'll turn into enemies and attack us. The material energy is so powerful. So the association of those who haven't developed their propensity to serve the Supreme Lord, so that means, yogis, jnanis, materialists, different types of people, they haven't developed their propensity. It's there, it's in them, it's covered over. It's not desirable. So even if that propensity appears to be, very pleasing, it's not desirable unless it's connected to Krishna. And then he cautions that preaching without practicing what one preaches is a limb of karma. So, of course, everyone here is a preacher, and everyone here is practicing. You're living in the temple, you're practicing. But still we have to remind ourselves, am I actually exemplifying what I'm speaking? In the very early days, we were speaking what we heard from Srila Prabhupada, because that's what he told us to do. But we didn't necessarily understand what we were saying, and nor were we strictly following. So I remember one time a news reporter came, and she was very interested. She had heard about these people down in the Haight-Ashbury. She came and she met me, and so she's asking me questions and I'm answering. And then she says, but are you really doing all, are all of you really doing all this? You're following all this? And it would have been easy to say, oh yes, we are. But actually, we really weren't so strict at that point. So I told her, we are trying. We are trying. And because I was honest with her, she wrote a wonderful report, because she felt that that was a symptom of the purity of what we were offering. And she could therefore appreciate Srila Prabhupada, So sometimes people will question us, And if we're like that sage when the was approached by one woman, her son had an illness. And the doctor said, he must stop eating sugar. If he doesn't stop eating sugar, he'll die. So she she couldn't do it. The son wouldn't listen to her, so she took him to one sage. And the sage said, well, bring him back in 1 week. Okay, so she came back in 1 week, and 1 week later the sage says, you must stop eating sugar. And because the boy was a little pious, yes, yes, Baba. But the mother goes, why didn't you just tell him last week? He goes, because last week I was eating sugar. But I could not speak until I myself was following. So you may not be greatly advanced, or you may be greatly advanced, but if we're not following, whatever great advancement will be minimized. And if we follow, whatever little advancement will become increased. So I want to thank you very much for allowing me to say a few things today. At least I hope, I quoted Bhaktisiddhanta in the hopes that you would get something valuable, because I don't have so much of value to offer. Hare Krishna. So, did anybody want to correct anything or challenge anything? All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.